It's Friday and you've reached the Kelly Wendland Vodcast. On today's vodcast, we talk with data capability leader Ben Utz. Coming up next.
420 parts per billion. Another glacier gone today. But if you just accept your Lord and Savior, it won't matter in a way.
Ben Utz, welcome to the program. How are you this morning? It's actually afternoon, but when I release it, it's the morning, so I say the morning.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me on, Kelly.
Yeah, well, thanks for making time to be with us. Really appreciate that.
Of course.
So, Ben, you are the new capability leader of data for Logisolve. Is that right?
I am, yes.
Cool. And how did you get into data? What's been your path to get you here?
Oh, sure. You could say almost it's a family tradition. My grandfather worked back on the tabulator machines where they did code with the punch cards. Dad worked back in the days of the operating system management, and now I work with the cloud. So it's become a family tradition. I started out back at a local MSP here in Minneapolis, moved over to a construction company where we did the metrics and KPIs for their service desk and internal IT. They found out I knew a little something about Excel and SQL, and from there we started building out a whole infrastructure and data team. Had so much fun doing that, convinced my little brother to join me, and we started our own business doing that for 5 years, and that was a whole lot of fun. But then the opportunity with Logisolve came along, and I couldn't pass it up.
Well, that's a cool background, and glad that it worked out that way.
Me too.
Yeah, and so we're going to get to the cloud and AI in a little bit, but I'm interested in something that I see around most of the companies that I work with. Mm-hmm. These companies today are really working hard to leverage the data that they have, and they're racing to implement new technology, some of which we just talked about here and we'll get into more depth with. But are people spending enough time on the blocking and tackling, data cleansing, basic organization of data components in order to get to those green fields of AI and cloud-based computing with data, you know, being sliced and diced exactly how the customers need it to happen? Tell me a little bit about your perspective on data cleansing and keeping data in findable spots.
Oh, of course. It's the eternal question, right? Am I a data engineer or am I a data scientist? And the answer is somewhere in the middle, right? There's a skill set that spans the whole breadth and depth of what we do in terms of the data and using that data. But really, I don't think that the data engineers get enough credit. It's that repeatability, sustainability, and being able to reuse that content and the data sets that the data engineers are so good at. The data scientists, of course, are the tip of the spear. They do all the exciting work with predictive analytics and seeing what the future holds. But without those core building blocks and the base of that pyramid with good, clean data, you can't do that analysis.
Do you think companies put enough emphasis on the data cleansing component of data?
Well, if they don't do it up front, they sure will have to do it later. It's a problem that doesn't go away and doesn't get any easier with the advanced analytics. So that investment up front to make sure that the data is organized in a clean, usable format is key.
Is that one of the basics of having a sound data strategy is, you know, make sure that you have clean data, have a continual process? And is it a continual Absolutely. Process when you're talking about clean data? Because everything is collected and stored today, it seems like. Mm-hmm. All the customer data, all the financials, which of course that makes sense. But if it's data at all, it's being collected and stored somewhere. So how do you recommend, or, you know, what do you think the basics are of a good data strategy for a big company or even a small company?
I would break it down into six basic components, and I use a restaurant analogy to kind of carry the message. The first one is data collection, right? Where are you sourcing your ingredients? Are we ordering from Sysco or the, you know, organic farm down the street? Where are we collecting all these pieces, right? All these sources of information. And that sets the basis of what dishes, what the menu is going to look like, and what the data analysis will really be, because you can't do the analysis without data. So once we know our ingredients, right, we get to storage. Where are we going to keep this data? Is it need to be in a big data set, small data set? Does it need to go to the fridge, the freezer? Does it fresh? What's the expiration date? All of those questions in terms of how do we keep that data and manage it and store it come into play there. Third part, data cleansing. You can't have the little brown bits from the avocados in the guacamole. It's no good. Nobody likes that. So you got to make sure that we take that data, we clean it up, we get the core pieces as much as possible and deliver it so that all of our mise en place, all of our components are ready to go. And then we get to the exciting bit. Part four, the transformation. That's where our chefs come in, our data analysts. They're pulling different ingredients, different components, and making those dishes that really satisfy the customer. Fifth is the visualization, right? You eat with your eyes first, and it's the same thing with data analysis. If the dashboard doesn't tell the story, if it doesn't look good, people immediately can't follow the thread, don't get the point, and they're not sure what to do with it. And the last part, part six, is security. Security, security, security. Understanding where your data is, who has access to it, and the logs of who's accessing it and downloading it is critical to make sure that your data is safe and sound.
Okay, interesting. So talking about the storage component of it, when I started, the world was driving, I know it was a long time ago, but the world was really focused on data centers. And so we went from servers in everybody's back rooms to people saying, okay, well, we need to build out data centers, or we're either going to outsource to data centers or we're going to build our own if companies were big enough. Is that still a thing? Or has the cloud taken all of that over and people are just dumping their data into repositories that are virtual for the cloud, for cloud consumption?
Oh, it's, as always, it's a mix. There has definitely been a huge uptick in utilization of the cloud services, and it's hard to argue not to, especially with the availability of scalable resources. So you pay down to the hour or even the minute of whatever resource you use. It can really cut down on the cost of any enterprise organization's IT costs. However, there is the hook that once you're on a platform or on a system, you are wed to that system, and there's nothing to stop Microsoft or any other vendor really from bringing up that price. So for the long term, we like to do a total cost analysis, make sure that the solution is going to work as expected, the cost is going to be as expected, and look at what security or other requirements might dictate that we keep something on premise. Certainly is still a valid and reasonable solution, but it's become more specialized in its use cases, mostly for security and regulatory compliance.
Is there a favored cloud environment for most companies that have a lot of data? Is AWS or Google better than Microsoft, or is Microsoft? I mean, like, how? I'm sure you get some evangelists yelling at each other at the top of a data mountain with that question, but what's your take on that?
Of course. You know, I personally, my bias is always toward the Microsoft stack. It's where I grew up and where most of my skill set lies. However, I always encourage to take a look and see what the playing field offers. The offerings from the big three really don't vary that much other in terms of some of their scalability and pricing. And choosing the right vendor for the right solution is really comes down to that experience and understanding what the requirements are for any client or project.
Is one or the other of those, and I'm assuming it's AWS, Azure, and Google, are those, is yep. Google the third one? Yeah. And, cause I know there's been some others, some, you know, Wild West kind of upstarts that people talk about that they say, well, this is starting to be a viable option. But so those are the big three. Does one or the other have better technology for slicing and dicing the data, or more utilities, or, you know, like if you're doing that analysis, is it based on, well, Microsoft has the most resources, both financially and in terms of existing technology debt to most companies, and so it's easier to implement than Microsoft? Or is AWS just a more nimble company, and so they're able to build out the cloud technology more effectively than Microsoft? What do you think when I talk about those different kind of variables?
Yeah, no, the AWS certainly has a lot of neat features, and it's been a lot of fun to see their evolution over the years. Microsoft just has the first mover advantage. Almost every company has a Microsoft account. It integrates with their entire stack. From a security perspective, there's just not a whole lot you have to manage on that side. It's really an impressive offering that they have.
What about Google? Because Google has, on the products that they do well, they're really a leader in my mind. How do you compare the Google product to the others?
Yeah, I see Google in the big data space, right? They really do well in that huge petabyte volume sort of situation. And Microsoft, I think, if I was to compare the two, has a little bit more tuned toward the small to mid-size enterprise. So they really focus on being able to scale their products, offer that sliding scale of costs, and that ease of integration with the rest of their systems.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about ChatGPT, because when I talk with engineers these days, software engineers, that is coming up more and more often. They're saying, well, I go to ChatGPT and I get, you know, if it's not full objects, they're getting, you know, they're getting some assistance from ChatGPT.
Absolutely.
Is that same thing happening in data?
Oh, every day, right? Back in the day, if I need to write a query, it would be a process of, you know, writing one word at a time, go Google the next word, figure out the syntax, put it in place, run it, see what errors I get. Now I can go to ChatGPT, put in the natural language, type in whatever element or query that I need, and it gives me a nice framework for, okay, here's the syntax, here's what you need to look out for. And it's even smart enough to know about environmental differences. So Azure Synapse versus Data Factory versus on-prem. So it really speeds up that time to knowledge to go, ah, shoot, I just can't remember what that query was. And it'll just pull it out from your natural language and produce it for you. Now, of course, you need to be considerate of two things. One is, you know, the actual practical code you have to go through and make sure that it's really going to do what you think it's going to do. And the security of putting any information into any search engine, let alone ChatGPT or Google. You want to make sure that none of the PII or PHI leaks into those conversations.
Sure. Has it gotten to the point yet where ChatGPT can help with architecture? So if you're, you know, building out architectures, you're typing it in and at least getting an opinion from ChatGPT?
Absolutely. Understanding the different components and getting its input into what may be an appropriate tool for a certain situation is fascinating. It's quite good at telling you the limits and constraints around the different tool sets, the different offerings and products. And for me personally, I use it to improve my writing. So even something as simple as emails, I'll pop it into ChatGPT, ask it to point out and explain my errors. And it's really made me a more effective communicator.
Fascinating. Well, good to know we're using it in all different parts of business today. And I guess I'm not surprised data is using it the same way. Ben Utz, thanks so much for your time. It's been a pleasure talking with you. And for everybody else out there, you are listening to the Kelly Wendland Podcast.
Thanks, Kelly. Pleasure to be here. Another glacier gone today. But if you just accept your Lord and Savior, it won't matter in a way. We'll be right back.
say.